Welcome to Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. I'm Kate Burdett. Coming up, the healthcare.gov open enrollment window closes in a couple of weeks. We'll hear from an expert with tips to make enrollment easier. A climate action expert will chat with Jay Fox, as well as an expert on the new cost of living increase for those on Social Security. And there's a new bill in the Ohio House that will benefit farmers. First up on Columbus Perspective,
it's that time of the year again. CMS Regional Administrator Shannon Hills joins us now to discuss open healthcare enrollment. Shannon, when does healthcare.gov open enrollment begin?
Open enrollment on healthcare.gov has started. It opened November 1st. So this is the time of year that people who need health insurance, we encourage them to visit healthcare.gov to review their current plan or to apply for coverage. And we want them to apply by December 15th for coverage that will begin January 1st.
So what's new this year?
What's new is, according to a new law, the Inflation Reduction Act, financial help is available for more customers to receive assistance on healthcare.gov to reduce the cost of their health insurance premiums. What's also new is that the website on healthcare.gov has been updated. The website is streamlined, making it easier than ever to apply and enroll.
How does the financial aid work, Shannon?
When people go to healthcare and enter their information, they will be able to see the financial help that may be available to them to pay for their health insurance premiums.
What is the threshold this year? Has it changed?
The good news is, when people go online to healthcare.gov, they will be able to see that information real time. The cost that an individual will pay is dependent upon the type of plan they select and where they live. But what's exciting is, when you're on healthcare.gov, you put in your information, you will be able to see in real time the financial assistance that may be available.
So what's the range of premium for somebody where I am right now in the Columbus area of Ohio?
Here's what's exciting. A 30-year-old woman who makes $30,000 a year can find 12 plans under $10 or less per month in Ohio. For a family of four whose parents are 40 years old and make $66,000 a year, that family can find 13 plans under $10 a month.
If I received coverage through healthcare.gov last year, why do I need to check again this year?
Great question. Every year, health insurance plan options can change. It may be the cost, the coverage, or even the doctors that are available in network. It's also really important to remember that every year, our own health needs can change. And so we encourage individuals to go online to healthcare.gov, update their information, review their current coverage, and shop for the other plans that are available in their area.
I'm not saying I'm going to do this, but on the just in case I have a lapse in memory and I forget the deadline, what happens if I miss the deadline?
If you miss the deadline, you may have to wait until the next open enrollment period, which is why it's really important that we want individuals to go online, submit an application, and enroll by December 15th. So coverage will begin January 1st.
So let's remember that date again, gang. December 15th, December 15th, December 15th. You've heard it three times. And we want to thank Shannon Hills, the CMS Regional Administrator, for joining us on Columbus Perspective to discuss open healthcare enrollment. For Columbus Perspective, I'm Jay Fox. Thanks for listening.
The Fan.
Here in Columbus, there are many organizations focused on climate change, from the Ohio EPA to Green Columbus to Ohioans for Ohioans for Sustainable Change. Our climate is top of mind in the capital city. International Day of Climate Action was October 24th. It marked a global reminder of the urgent need to continue advancing a safer climate for all of us. Lena Moffitt is the executive director of Evergreen and has dedicated her life to pursuing climate justice. Lena, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. Let's start at the beginning. What is climate justice?
Yeah, well, first off, thanks for mentioning International Day of Climate Action, a day to raise awareness about the issue of climate change and the importance of taking action. Two issues important to us here at Evergreen Action, the nonprofit organization I lead, dedicated to policies to address climate change while also making people's lives better.
So when we talk about making people's lives better, we're talking about a variety of things like healthy communities, clean, zero emission transportation, things of that nature, correct?
That's right. But we're also talking about things like the extreme weather we've seen lately, whether it's the hurricanes that folks in the Southeast are still recovering from that wiped entire towns off the face of the map, to farmers struggling to grow their crops in one of the worst droughts we've seen ever that happened this past year right here in Ohio. Or I'm a mom. I worry about my kids getting asthma and really suffering in the extreme heat that we have been feeling. So it's helping folks respond to the direct impacts of climate change, but then also making sure that they have resources to do so through things like jobs. We're talking about policies that would help us not just cut pollution, but actually create good family-supporting jobs right here in the United States, or lower people's utility bills. You know, I know folks across the country are struggling with high energy bills, and we can lower those utility bills with cheaper, cleaner, reliable sources of power.
One of the things that puzzles me when we talk about climate change is that everyone constantly talks about global warming. But I grew up in Cleveland and am no stranger to the Great Lakes area. And in some cases, climate change has meant colder than usual temperatures in the winter. Is that part of the confusion when people hear these stories?
Yeah, it can be hard to separate what you're seeing every single day to the long-term trends. And climate change is basically disrupting things. Things are going to get weirder. In some places, it's going to get a lot hotter every summer, and sometimes it will mean colder and more intense, severe snowstorms in the winter. But folks need to focus on the long-term trends here. And across the board, scientists are indicating that our actions are leading to climate change, which is leading to this extreme weather. But the upside is that we have policies to solve both these problems, to cut pollution, but also help people respond better. And in our playbook, we outline some of those common sense steps. I want to note they would build on policies that we've seen over the past few years, like the Inflation Reduction Act, which is really helping us invest in our companies and in the American economy to make sure we're ready to lead the world in building those clean energy and clean technologies the global economy is increasingly demanding. And that includes $10 billion of investment that has come right here to the state of Ohio, creating more than 13,000 jobs just in Ohio alone.
Why do you think that there's such a trend toward denying that something has changed? Because if you look at the calendar and you specifically look at the first 15 days of October of this year, the weather was very much like it used to be during the month of September. It's almost like the whole calendar has been pushed back a month. Why are people still saying nothing's changing?
Well, it can be hard to think about these kinds of big, complex problems when, you know, you're struggling to put food on the table, or you're a farmer struggling with failing crops. I'm a mom with I have two stepkids and two kids of my own. We have a lot of bills to pay at home, and I know that is top of mind. And when we talk about solutions to climate change, we need to really be cognizant of what folks are facing every day. So the policies that we're proposing would help folks with those needs they're facing, lowering bills, creating more good-paying jobs, and again, making sure that we're ready to lead the world in building the clean energy and clean technologies we need. And as folks see those benefits, I think folks are going to be more comfortable talking about climate change and the solutions that really can be win-win for our communities.
I always participate in Earth Day in April, and I've got my bag, and I go around, and I pick up trash, and, you know, I feel good about that. What would I have done if I had participated in Climate Action Day on October 24th?
Yeah, well, that's great that you do that. First off, thank you. I love to celebrate Earth Day, too. And one of the most important things you can do any day of the year is to use your voice, to stay involved at the local level. So make sure that the decision makers in your town, whether it's your city council members, all the way up to your governor, to whoever is going to be president, knows that this is an issue that is important to you, to your family, and to your community. Your voice is important, and one person really can make a difference.
One thing that I wanted to touch on before I let you go is your battle plan or new roadmap, if you will. Can you give me an overview of what this looks like? Because I think some people want to be able to participate in this both at home and at work.
Yeah. For sure. Well, through policies like those we outlined in our playbook, we want to see our government continuing investments in clean energy, for instance. So incentives for companies that want to build clean energy so that we are, again, positioned to lead the world in the global economy that's increasingly demanding clean energy and clean technology, but making sure that that is built right here at home so that we're creating good union jobs and growing our middle class while we're at it. And those kinds of incentives can help us both lower pollution, but also make sure we've got a thriving economy. So as you are getting engaged and using your voice, make sure that you're telling decision makers that this issue is important to you and that there are win-win solutions that you want them to support.
This is a conversation that could go on for hours, but obviously we don't have hours. So if we want to drive the listeners to a site where they can learn more about your organization and these topics, where can they go?
Yeah, check out evergreenaction.com for more details on these policies and what you can do to help protect our planet. Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. We want to thank Lena Moffitt, the executive director of Evergreen, talking about her action plan and also the International Day of Climate Action that was October 24th. For Columbus Perspective, I'm Jay Fox.
The Fan.
You're listening to Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Here's more from Jay Fox.
Each year, the Social Security Administration announces the cost of living adjustment, otherwise known as COLA, for the upcoming year. The 2025 COLA increase was announced on October 10th. COLA increases are meant to offset rising prices, including food, gas, and living expenses. This year, retirees on a fixed income have struggled to keep up with inflation, and the 2025 COLA is intended to provide some relief. Here in Columbus, there are over 100,000 citizens on Social Security, of which more than two-thirds are retired workers. Jen Jones is the Vice President of Government Affairs for the American Association of Retired People, AARP, and we thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
What does the cost of living adjustment or COLA increase mean for people who receive Social Security benefits?
So, Jay, this COLA increase is essential for ensuring that Social Security recipients receive the full value of their earned benefit. We know that Social Security is the primary source of retirement income for 40% of older Americans. And so this adjustment gives them just a little more sort of buying power, a little more money in their pocket, a little more gas in their tank, a few more groceries in their cart.
We are always taught gratitude, gratitude, gratitude. Should folks be happy with the increase, or is it simply not enough?
So I know that for many retirees, the announcement of a 2.5% increase will feel insufficient. In fact, AARP just released earlier this week a survey, and 83% of respondents said anything below 3% isn't sufficient to meet the rising costs. So we know people, millions of Americans are struggling, especially those that are on Social Security. But again, we believe every little bit helps. And this annual, this sort of annual adjustment means just a little bit more buying power, especially for those on fixed incomes.
So we talked at the beginning about 100,000 plus citizens here in Columbus, two-thirds retired workers. How does Social Security affect the people here in Columbus, Ohio?
Right. So in the state of Ohio, there are more than 2.4 million Ohioans receiving Social Security. And we know that for the state, it lifts 630,000 people out of poverty. Again, with 40% of older Americans across the country relying on Social Security as their primary source of retirement income, it truly is the bedrock of their sort of lifestyle. It means everything to them.
So how old should you be when you claim your Social Security benefits? Because I know over the years it's changed.
Yeah, so you can claim your benefit as early as 62. However, if you claim early, your benefits get reduced. Full retirement age is 67. And we get this question all the time. And we usually say planning is key. And you should ask yourself some key questions. How much have you saved for retirement, right? What do you want your sort of post-retirement lifestyle to be? How much debt are you still carrying? What's your physical health? And we ask all these questions because, one, this is a really personal decision. But two, you know, we often encourage people to wait as long as they can, wait until full retirement age, so they can maximize that benefit, right? Because we know just how important it is for their independence and honestly their dignity.
So let's say I'm 67 and I claim my full Social Security benefits. Can I earn income outside of that, or am I not allowed? And if I am allowed, how much can I earn?
You are able to continue to sort of earn some income. I think it sort of varies in terms of what the maximum you can earn before your Social Security benefits start to be reduced. But you can continue to work and you can continue to still earn some income.
Okay. So what is the AARP specifically doing to make sure Social Security sticks around and also address any potential issues that the citizens of this country have with that administration?
So, you know, Social Security is AARP's top legislative priority. And it is because we know generations of Americans have depended on it for their retirement. Older Americans believe it is absolutely important to save and protect Social Security, not only for themselves, but for their children. And so AARP is advocating every single day for Congress to act in a bipartisan way to make sure that we are looking at sort of Social Security's financial future and making sure it'll be there for the long haul. AARP is also advocating on improvements to the Social Security Administration. We know that they have been plagued by customer service issues, and so we are urging Congress to do a couple different things. One, to increase oversight, to make sure that they are doing as much as they can to serve the 70 million Americans that receive Social Security today, but also that they receive some additional support on the administrative side so they can staff up because they are experiencing historic staffing lows, and that so they can improve their technology to improve their the quality of their customer service for the millions of Americans that deserve it, right?
Right. So 70 million Americans may want to complain. Who do they complain to?
Well, I mean, if they want to complain, I would encourage them to complain to their sort of member of Congress, right? Because oversight of the agency is held by Congress. If they want to sort of make their voices heard around the future of Social Security, how impactful and important it is, again, I would urge them to reach out to their member of Congress. Now, if they're looking for ways to engage on this issue and to become an advocate and to fight for the future of Social Security, I would encourage them to visit AARP.org/Social Security. There's information, there's tools, there's also a way to get involved.
Jen Jones is the Vice President of Government Affairs for AARP. We thank you for joining us today. And for Columbus Perspective, I'm Jay Fox.
The Fan.
Ohio House Bill 324 would provide a limited-time 5 cents per gallon non-refundable tax incentive to fuel retailers in Ohio for each gallon of E15 fuel they sell. Joining us on Columbus Perspective today, Tad Nicholson, Executive Director of Ohio Corn and Wheat. Welcome, Tad.
Thank you very much for having me.
Sure. First of all, for those who may not know, what is E15?
A lot of people are seeing this number, this new octane at the retailers. It's unleaded 88. And surprisingly, it's priced at a lower price than the 87, which we're all used to grabbing. And so this is causing a lot of people to wonder what's going on there. And that is because it has 5% more ethanol in it. It's a lower cost than gasoline, and that lowers the price of that blended fuel. But it still enjoys the higher octane.
So is it listed on the pump as E15, or is it listed on the pump as 88, or both?
It's unleaded 88. You'll see it as U88, and that's the octane level, remember? So it's your car likes octane, so it's a better fuel for your car at a lower price. And so that's why we think it's such an exciting thing. It's really kind of a win-win for consumers, retailers, and farmers, too.
So can every vehicle use unleaded 88, or does it just work on certain vehicles?
Over a decade ago, the U.S. EPA approved unleaded 88 for any light-duty vehicle 2001 and newer. That's 96 or 97% of the vehicles on the road today. So the ones that you and I are driving right now can certainly use unleaded 88 and enjoy that lower cost.
Where do you find unleaded 88? Because I haven't seen it.
Almost more than two. Well, that's one of the reasons we want this tax credit, because what it's going to do is entice fuel retailers to make this offer to their customers. And so it's located at about over 200 locations today, and you'll see it at retailers like Sheets, Thornton's, UDF, lots of different retailers are carrying that. So unleaded 88 is an increasing offer. It's a lower price. It's safe for your car.
Are there any plans for it to be offered at places like Kroger?
We would love for them to start offering that as well. And so lots of different considerations when a retailer is making the decision to offer this to their customers. That's why we want this tax credit to help them make that decision. So if it's just a slight bump that allows them to reduce their risk of putting in new infrastructure, a blender pump that they need to have in there for that, that's going to be something very good for them. It's going to increase the availability to consumers, which is where we all win.
How long will this incentive be available to retailers?
It's going to be it sunsets in 4 years, and so retailers have from when it's passed, they have 4 years to take advantage of this, which is why it's kind of a secure ask. I mean, this is an easy ask of our General Assembly because there are limits. There's a cap of $10 million, can't go over that. It's a non-refundable, so you have to have a tax liability in order to receive it, and it expires 4 years after it starts. So there's lots of different safeguards in there. It's not a wasteful type of a thing. It's truly one of these things that is going to be a win-win for every consumer, every retailer, and every farmer.
How does this impact Ohio's agricultural economy?
You know, Ohio has home to 7 ethanol plants, and about, if you look at all the corn that is grown in this state, about 37% of it all goes to an ethanol plant to be made into fuel. And so anytime that we can increase demand for corn, agriculture wins. And so 7 ethanol plants adds a lot of economic activity to our state. There are thousands and thousands of farmers who deliver corn to those. And so anytime we are able to increase a demand for corn through higher blends of ethanol, like unleaded 88, farmers win. And so this is a very important thing to the agriculture community.
We want to thank Tad Nicholson, the Executive Director of Ohio Corn and Wheat, for joining us. And for Columbus Perspective, I'm Jay Fox.
The Fan.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Now, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10TV, here's Doug Petcash from the Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10TV.
Joining me now to talk about the big issues in the Ohio legislature is State Representative Dontavius Gerrels of Columbus. He is also the House Assistant Minority Leader. Representative, thanks for your time today.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
All right. First of all, let's talk about the bathroom bill. What do you think of it passing?
You know, what I'll say is we don't even know how this thing is going to be enforceable. And the truth of the matter is there are kids who are going to be victims of this legislation, kids who go to school every single day wanting to learn, and they're going to be subject to ridicule and persecution simply because of the gender that they identify with. And the truth is, this takes us in the wrong direction. I don't believe it's a great bill.
You know, Republicans argue it protects kids who are not transgender. What do you say to that?
Well, I say that we want to protect all students, including the 32,000 plus students that identify as being transgender. And we got to make sure there's protections for those students as well. And the fact is, these bills do not protect those students. It puts a focus on them that is going to create more harm than it is good for the entire school, but particularly for those students.
The Senate is also expected to take action on House Bill 8. That's the Parents' Bill of Rights.
Yeah.
It would require schools to ensure any sexuality content is age appropriate, notify parents of changes to health care services provided to their child, but also notify parents of any request by a student to identify as a gender that does not align with the student's biological sex. It already passed in the House, and every Democrat voted against it.
Yeah.
Why did the Democrats vote against it?
Well, because it takes us in the wrong direction. You know, students should have some autonomy to talk to someone in a safe space, to tell them how they feel, and hopefully get some resources so that they can make decisions for them. But when you're bringing in other individuals who they may feel unsafe to have these conversations with, the truth of the matter is these students won't have a safe place to go. And when that happens, these students unfortunately fall through the crack.
But these students are under the care of their parents.
True.
And they are minors.
Yes.
So why shouldn't the parents be notified of something important like that?
Well, I think it's all about the basis of the bill. And when you think about how students are feeling in those moments, these are questions, right? They want to just get answers. They want to have a safe space to kind of tell someone how they feel without this idea of a parent coming in and, you know, maybe, you know, not necessarily understanding their child in that moment. And so I think that, you know, by creating this kind of overarching view of, I don't know, I think this bill does not, it's not centered on making sure student voices are heard. It's not centered on ensuring that students feel heard, seen in a way that protects them and their own privacy. It just takes our state backwards, I believe.
A bill was also introduced in the Senate to ban the sale of intoxicating hemp products.
Yes.
These are the products like gummies and candies that are sold in convenience stores, gas stores, gas stations. The governor has been really pushing for this to protect kids. Where does the Democratic caucus stand on that bill?
Well, I think, you know, we have always stood on the idea that, one, we don't want kids to have any products that's going to harm them or poison them. We also believe that there has to be some regulations around Delta 8 and all these variations of the deltas as the formularies change. But we also believe that maybe there's not that there's a place where an outright ban may not necessarily do good for Ohioans because we just passed issue 2, which essentially legalized marijuana. And so there has to be some compromise in the middle where regulation absolutely is needed so that children don't get their hands on these hemp products, but also give access to individuals who see it as something they want to use.
I've heard other legislators talk about protecting businesses or putting it like it would be with cigarettes or alcohol.
Correct.
You have a 21-year-old age limit.
Yes.
that would be something you would support?
I think that there are lots of conversation that we can have around this bill and around hemp. And I do believe that there definitely should be some regulations. I think what it looks like is going to be a compromise between the House and the Senate, because you do have some colleagues who want to do an outright ban. And that may not necessarily work across our entire caucus or across our entire both chambers. And so right now, I think what's most important is that we're protecting young people, making sure they don't get their hands on these products that are going to harm them. And we're creating the flexibility for individuals who choose to use these products to use them in a way where they are at age and it's available to them.
Let's switch now to looking forward. The Democratic caucus priorities for,
yes,
for this lame duck session,
yes,
Representative Geralds, where is the top priority for you?
Well, listen, I think we have a number of bills, both in the Senate and the House, that are currently waiting to be passed. Roughly somewhere in a ballpark of 99 bills is in the Senate. We have about 49 plus bills that is in the House. Some of them are bipartisan, some of them are not. Mm-hmm. And the intention is we want to pass good bills that's going to move Ohio forward. We want to do things like address property taxes, where we're seeing property taxes raised in some places up to 67%, right, in terms of their housing value. And those families pay for their homes, but very well could lose them simply because their inability to pay for property taxes. We want to pass bills like the Crown Act, where it's currently in the Senate and is providing protections for people with textured hair. My colleague, Representative Brent, mm-hmm, has spearheaded that with a Republican colleague, and we want to see that passed. We want to really begin to talk about child care access, right? And so that families who are seeing a third of their paycheck be used for child care have some relief so that they can do more for their families. And I think most importantly, I believe, we got to begin to think about health care access. You know, we have families who simply do not have health care access in this state, or it's very difficult to navigate the health care system. And we really want to help those families because we know when we do, we are saving lives.
And it seems in the discussions I've had with others that there is bipartisan support, in particular for property tax,
yes, relief
and child care. But the
absolutely
question is, how do you achieve it, right?
Absolutely. It is. You know, we have a bill that's looking at a circuit breaker with my colleague, Representative Isaacson, mm-hmm, and a Republican colleague. You know, we're looking at ways to provide tax credits for families to pay for child care access. You know, so I think we don't have a lot of time in the lame duck. My hope is that we can have these conversations in a bipartisan way. We can move these bills. It's going to impact families for the better and really build the type of Ohio that we all deserve.
Now, I've heard that in the past, you know, that a lot of stuff has gotten accomplished in lame duck, and in others, not much has gotten,
yeah,
accomplished at all. We did see some movement this week, you know,
yes,
the passing of the bathroom bill and being,
yes,
that sent to the governor. What else do you expect in the next, you know, 2 to 3 weeks as this wraps up?
Well, I know we always do road naming, so I'm going to get the road namings out the way first. We always do road namings and bridges, and so I'm glad to have that bill. We typically have a Christmas tree bill that is with a lot of appropriations or last dollar appropriation we want to get out. We saw that in House Bill 45 in the last GA. You know, my hope is that we can address property taxes, we can address this hemp issue, we can really begin. There's a bill around foster care scholarships that we want to get passed out of the Senate. I could see that as a possibility. You know, really, the Crown Act, as I mentioned, mm-hmm, there are a lot of good bills that is currently in the chambers that we, in both chambers, House and the Senate, that we can pass right now. And it will make a real difference in the lives of families today.
We just have a minute left. I wanted to ask, the Democrats picked up 2 seats in the House and,
yes,
2 seats in the Senate.
Yes.
The Republicans still hold a supermajority in both. Will the addition of these 4 members in the caucus make a difference?
Of course they will. And one, it's the most immediate thing that it does is it ensures that we can beat back an emergency clause. So not every single bill that passes has an emergency provision attached to it.
Meaning that it could take effect right away.
Correct. Correct. And it would not necessarily be subject to referendum. And so that's the other piece that we want to be really mindful about, but using that power, those 2 new members coming into the House. The other piece is it gives us opportunity to leverage the 34 members we have next GA to pass good bills and stop bad bills that are going to harm families. And so we'll see. I'm excited about the next GA, and we got work to do for the betterment of Ohio.
Always do, don't you?
That we,
yeah,
do.
All right. Representative Geralds, thank you so much for your time
thank
today
you.
And your perspective on these important
issues. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
Columbus Perspective is a public affairs presentation of WBNS Radio. The opinions expressed on this program are those of its guests and do not necessarily reflect those of WBNS Radio, its staff, management, or sponsors.
The Fan.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Here's more from Face the State, courtesy of 10TV.
Today we're focusing on the lame duck session of the state legislature. This General Assembly is wrapping up its 2 years of business before the new one starts in the new year. And lame duck has gotten off to a busy start. Joining me now to talk about what's happened so far and the Republican priorities for the rest of the session is State Senator Andrew Brenner of Delaware. Senator, thanks for your time. Thanks for coming in today.
Glad I could be here. Thank you.
Well, let's start off with some of the big news that did come out of the first week of lame duck. The Senate passed the so-called bathroom bill in Senate to the governor's desk. It bans transgender students from using bathrooms that fit their gender identities and requires schools to designate separate bathrooms, locker rooms, and overnight accommodations for the exclusive use of either males and females based on their gender assigned at birth. Senator, do you feel that this was a good bill?
Yeah, I mean, it was actually put into my bill. So myself and my joint sponsor, Jerry Serino, encouraged concurrent on the vote. This has been an issue that's been ongoing. Obviously, we've had international news on this at the, you know, in the national level from the NCAA and women and all those types of issues around it. But it's gone down to the local level. And I will tell you, I have numerous parents, especially mothers, who have been very much concerned that their daughters are going into locker rooms, are going into bathrooms with boys. Having, you know, been a boy myself, I know boys can say things and do things to pretend that they're doing some things to try to get into those bathrooms just to cause mischievous deeds that they shouldn't be doing. Do we have sympathy for any and all kids who have gender dysphoria? Absolutely. And in fact, the bill did have some accommodations for that. They can use other, you know, family restrooms, or there could be policy set up for using faculty restrooms. So there are things along that, but it's very simple. If you are biologically female, you use biologically female restrooms. And if you're biologically male, you use biologically male restrooms.
But what do you say to those who would say that this will create unsafe environments for transgender individuals and, you know, another way of making them feel less than other people?
Well, I would say that these environments in general are safe, but we have added a large group of potentially kids that can create an unsafe environment. And I think that the schools need to do a better job also of monitoring what's going on in those restrooms in general to protect all students, whether they're transgender or not. I also, though, believe, I've looked at the scientific evidence that's been coming out of Sweden specifically has indicated that a lot of the stuff that has been used over the last 20, 30 years, whether it's hormone blockers or some of the other things, isn't working and has not reduced suicides. It has not reduced depression. And the scientific evidence has now actually gone the other direction on it. So I believe that in general, the entire medical community needs to take a relook at this. And I know some of them have here in the United States.
But what about how they feel in schools kind of being, you know, separated in this way?
Well, again, they will still be able to use the restroom of their biological sex, so they should be able to do that. I think that and given the fact that they're not going to be able to undergo any hormonal or surgeries as a youth, that they will still be able to use those restrooms.
In the House, there was a hearing on a bill to ban disbursement of state funds to any entity that supports, promotes, or provides abortions. Do you support that, and do you see it having a chance of going through?
I'm pro-life, so I would support that. I see that potentially going through. However, again, we have the Ohio Constitution. We, as a General Assembly, control purse strings, so we could and have a right to say that we don't want taxpayer dollars spent on that. That's not to say that that abortions won't happen in Ohio, because they will. The Constitution was passed a year ago, and I don't see this even Republican Supreme Court overturning that.
A bill was also introduced in the Senate to ban the sale of intoxicating hemp. This has been a big issue for the governor. He's concerned about kids being able to buy this at gas stations and convenience stores and because of its dangers to them. Where do you stand on that bill?
Well, I believe Senate President Huffman and many members of the General Assembly, specifically in the Senate, do support that. I think there is some discussion about just completely banning it. I know that we're having internal discussions about, you know, should they be over the age of 21.
What do you see as your big priority for the rest of this lame duck session?
Well, this lame duck session, we are going to be working most likely on House Bill 8 and a few education things, at least that I'm dealing with. As we've mentioned, I think we're trying to get the hemp bill through. House Bill 8 is the bill that's dealing with basically the parents' bill of rights, so to speak, so they know what their kids are being taught in the classroom when it comes to health-related matters, or whether or not a kid wants to be, their particular gender, or they're confiding into their teachers or counselors something very specific, that the parents have a right to know what that is. Unless, of course, the student themselves is potentially going to be put in danger by the parent. And in that particular case, the school can withhold that, and that is even included in House Bill 8. I expect that that will move.
So this is the bill that would require the schools to notify parents?
Correct.
Of if their child is in the LGBTQ plus community?
Or anything along those lines. If there's anything that the student is confiding in, that there's some issue with the student, whether it's a health matter or whether it is, saying, hey, I want to be known by this pronoun or whatever, the parents should be informed. And I believe that is the case. I believe that the entire Republican caucus believes that's the case for the most part. And I believe that this is a bill which will pass before we leave.
So you don't believe that that violates the students' rights?
Students are minors, and they're the complete responsibility of their parents. And I think that that is something that the parents need to know so that the parents can also, address the matter in their home and understand what their students are and their child is going through. I mean, it's hard for a parent to know what their child's going through if they're not properly informed. And I think that the schools have a duty and should have a duty to let the parents know, hey, your child who is maybe a girl or female is thinking that they're wanting to be male. I think that parent has a right to know that.
Senator, we'll have to leave it there. I really do appreciate your time today. Thank you for coming in.
Again, that's Doug Petcash, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10TV, from the Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10TV. This has been Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. Heard each Sunday morning at 6 on WBNS FM 97.1 The Fan and on 1460 AM ESPN Columbus.